Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galina, and as always, I'm joined by my man Scott Chu. Scott is working his fingers to the bone, still dealing with that torn MCL right there. Scott, how you holding up?
Well, it's ACL. I don't know what I
It's an ACL, right? You tore something.
I don't know. I got an MRI. I still haven't gotten my MRI. That's on Thursday. But my knee, like from a medical standpoint, I'm not a doctor, but my knee is just jacked. It's just completely destroyed. I can't do anything. I got a brace. I've got some very nice canes though. So those have helped. But I'm doing well. I'm having fun putting together my ranks. The ones we're going to talk about today are kind of like the ones I like to start with a lot because of how many people in this position play another position for fantasy. So when I do these ranks, I get the skeleton of all the other ranks ready to go.
Right. What Scott's talking about is we're going to be breaking down the fantasy baseball second base position. Last week, we did the first base position. And like last week, we'll be discussing both Scott's ranks and the draft strategy behind those rankings. And just as a reference point, we're recording this episode on Monday, February 7th. It's about 10 p.m. Eastern time. And yesterday, Scott, on Sunday, Justin Mason and his wife, who you should be following on Twitter, at Mrs. D. Salinger, put together a very entertaining video announcing the TGFBI, that's the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational League. They announced the league assignments yesterday.
They did. They're, you know, obviously they are, they're the most fun of of anybody. I love them to death. I'm really excited to be in TGFBI. I always enjoy doing it. I have varying success. I've done extremely well. I've done okay. And I've done really poorly. This year will be interesting with the number of folks that I sort of recognize. You know, the more years I'm in this industry, the more people I've run into. Brendan Tuma, who's at Fantasy Pros, he's in my league. Andrew Dewhurst, who I've worked with Friends of Fantasy Benefits and Fantasy Alarms in my league. Our own David Swan is out there.
Nice.
And of course, the Fantasy Bad Boy, the mascot of fantasy himself, Yancey Eaton of Yancey Eaton fame.
Yeah, in my league, I'm competing against Jeff Erickson, Ryan Hallam from Fantasy Alarm, the legend Lenny Melnick, Brad Johnson. So, I mean, TGFBI, it's an industry league made up of 31 15-team leagues. That's 465 participants. And definitely want to thank Justin Mason. Follow him at Justin Mason, FWFB, for allowing me to participate. Once again, this is my fifth TGFBI. And like you know, I've done okay, and then I've done horrible. Last season, my team just tanked, so I need to bounce back here. And every season, Justin raises money for charity through the league. And this season, he's decided to donate half the league participants' donations to Emily Walden's GoFundMe page. Now, Emily is battling breast cancer. She used to work at The Athletic. Now she's with Baseball America, where she covers your Tigers prospects. So if you want to make a contribution to the GoFundMe page, just Google Emily Walden. That's WALDON. And GoFundMe, and you can make a donation there if you like. So what I love is that, you know, we get to do and participate in a fantasy league that's a lot of fun and that we love to be a part of, but also get to help as well.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's just a way to compete with all these people I like and have I just like competing in an overall where I don't have to pay $1,500.
And you know what? I've never been in Tout Wars or Labor, the other industry league. So this is a great chance also to play with a lot of different people in the industry as well.
Well, but you might as well be in that because you've got Ariel Cohen and Mike Kirkland Tristan Cockcroft.
It goes on and on and on. You're right. You know, Saris.
Good luck, buddy.
Sucks. So the drafts take place, Scott, on the NFBC platform. You could choose where you prefer to draft from. I know it's early. I think we have till the end of the month before the drafts take place. But where do you think that you'd want to be drafting from in a 15-team league at this stage?
You know, the depth of talent at the top of the draft is very, very tempting to me. So I am sort of liking being more in like the middle of the first round. Like, I feel like every time I've picked anywhere from like fifth through 10th, I've felt really good about those first two picks. Like, man, how did this happen? And it's because there's a lot of talent at the top of the draft. So I don't think there's these huge gaps like we've seen before where there's this crazy tier drop off. There is one, but nothing like we've seen in years past where it's like the worst spot to pick is fourth. Right.
Right.
We're not dealing with any of that. So I kind of like being in the middle, and it also helps me adjust during the draft instead of having to wait a full, you know, people that like the corners are like, it's cool to be at the turn, but you got to wait so long and so much happens between your picks. I get in my own head. Yeah. So I don't always like to be out there. I like the middle.
I kind of agree with you, especially in a 15 teamer, you know, you get the first pick and you get to choose the player that you love. But then you just might as well take a nap by the time it's time for you to make your next two picks. So, but let's dive right in into your second base rankings. Never easy ranking players there, Scott. But were there any special nuances that you encountered when trying to rank fantasy second baseman? Anything, or was there anything that really sticks out at you?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things I'll say right off the bat that were tough. Max Muncy was tough at first base. He was even tougher at second base because it felt like he could be really at the top of a tier or, you know, at the bottom of it. And normally, like, you don't think about that very much, but this is like the third tier. Mm-hmm. The first two tiers cover two players, right? So like that third tier itself is really rough. And then your risk tolerance is either going to put you around probably where I am at Max Muncy, or it's going to shove you like way down. Basically, there's going to be two camps with Max Muncy. There's people that are willing to draft him and people that aren't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, how that's going to play out.
Yeah. And to continue our discussion about the second base position, it's going to be interesting this year because Gleyber Torres is going to be second base eligible before too long because he's expected to be the Yankees' starting second baseman this season. In some leagues, Mookie Betts is going to be second base eligible. And then later on, we're going to have to decide what we want to do, and it's probably going to be more of a waiver wire decision or not, about a guy like Robinson Cano, who's coming back from a long suspension.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing now is second base used to be like a total wasteland. Like, it was a couple guys at the top, and then it was just like, blah. But, I mean, there's good players, you know, pretty deep into the list. I mean, there's, in a 12 teamer, it's not ideal, but like, there's nothing wrong with Ryan McMahon, Eduardo Escobar, and Luis Urias, who all can hit 25 plus home runs, can all, you know, are all going to play every day. Like, those are decent players. So like, on one hand, it is interesting to think about what's going to happen with Gleyber Torres or, you know, anyone else really coming back. But like, I think of those three guys. Ryan McMahon, Eduardo Escobar, Luis Urias. If you're coming in and you can't be more interesting than those guys, and to a slightly lesser extent, Jonathan Scope, if you can't be as interesting as those guys, like, I really don't care about you in a 12-team context because you're replaceable. Not because you're not good, you're just utterly replaceable.
Right. All right, so let's start at the top here. Your first two selections here, Trey Turner, who, when I quote ADP, I think for today I'll use Fantasy Pros consensus rankings, and we could also go back to the NFBC as well, but the Fantasy Pros consensus rankings combines RT Sports, NFBC, and Fantrax, and gives you an aggregate of those ADPs. And on Fantasy Pros, Trey Turner, his ADP is 2. He's second base shortstop eligible, going first overall in many preseason drafts. I'd say a 30-30 season is in his future. It might not happen this season, but I'm sure before he's done, he's going to have a 30-30 season. Real five-tool guy, really looked comfortable getting traded to the Dodgers, didn't skip a beat. So I'll ask you this about Trey Turner and just in general. If you happen to get the first pick overall in a draft, who would it be?
Fernando Tatis Jr.
Okay. That's in a redraft. Okay.
Yeah, that's in any league. I just think Fernando Tatis Jr. is the future. I think that he's amazing. He and Shohei Ohtani are going to be the, you know, really what we think of for baseball for a long time. But that said, I don't begrudge anyone who takes Trey Turner first. And the deeper the league, the more tempted I am to do that. And here's why. It's because when you talk about a first round pick, some people are going to be really risk averse, right? They really don't want to take a risk with their number one overall pick. And it, you know, Fernando Tatis to a lot of people represents a risk. That risk being that his shoulder is going to fall off. Right. That said, it wasn't that long ago that Trey Turner was a durability issue, right? Like, he's now played two straight seasons and three of the last four, although one of those was a 60 game season. But he's missed a lot of games. Now, that said, we do know that every time he plays, he's very good. So it kind of almost doesn't even matter. But the huge power outburst plus going to, you know, one of the best teams in baseball, everything about what he does is very repeatable. Everything about what he does, like, so even if, and even if the power falls back, we were already taking him in the first round, the first half of the first round.
Right.
So like he's also a very safe pick. There's no really, he and Ozzie Albies, who is later in ADP. And I had to make him in like his own tier because he's definitely always being taken as the second baseman, right? He's not, and no one is debating Trey Turner, Ozzie Albies in any context, not in Dynasty, not anywhere. So I can't put him in the same tier, but then he's like all on his own because he's definitely ahead of the third tier. You always take Ozzie Albies ahead of them. So he's kind of a weird guy. Like you don't really think about him when you're valuing Ozzie Albies. You don't really think about him as like the number two second baseman. He's such a highly rated hitter that you're really thinking about like the top 20, 25 hitters. Cause who cares about position at that point anyway?
Yeah. And Fantasy Pros has him as with an ADP of 21, and NFBC also basically agrees that Ozzie Albies with an ADP of 20. And just an aside, this season in redraft leagues, Tatis is incredible. You know, when he plays, he's incredible. But I'm a little bit more risk averse than you. And so I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to avoid him this season. But let's stick to the second base. We'll talk about Tatis when we do shortstops. But next tier, now, is this the meat of the position? Is this where you want to grab your second baseman out of here, out of this tier?
I mean, maybe, right? So this tier is, I mean, number one, it's got Marcus Semien and Javier Baez in it, who all, we'd also talk about at shortstop. But it's probably part of the meat, right? Like, I really think you can probably feel good with anyone in tier three or four. It just depends how early in the draft you want to address it, what targets you had early in the draft that either worked out or didn't work out. But I am expecting that unless my hand is forced in the draft room, I'm probably going to end up with someone from tier three or four.
All right, let's tell everyone real quick who's in tier three, because you know the probably like,
yeah, so
who the heck are you talking
about?
Who
are these guys? So Whit Merrifield is in this tier, second base outfield, steals a bunch of bases, hits for a good average, really safe player. Marcus Semien, of course, now in Texas, is second base and shortstop. Javier Baez is second base and shortstop eligible. Detroit scares me a little bit because he might lose some home runs there, but it should actually help his batting average, right? You know, if he there's plenty of green for those hard hit line drives to fall. He just has to also not strike out a bazillion times.
Right.
Jose Altuve in this tier, steady old Jose Altuve. And I have Max Muncy as my number seven overall second baseman. I have him at the end of the third tier. I think some people are going to think that's insane, and that's fine. It all depends on how you take the no news from the Dodgers, which, by the way, they never give us any news about anything. So you can be risk averse. Just make sure you understand the risk you're taking, right? The risk isn't like some piece of news we got. right? He said, oh, my arm is healing a little more slowly in like November. Right. Like,
yeah. And like I said, I think it's been known now that it's, we're talking about a torn UCL, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
we know what the injury is. We know that he's not getting surgery. They said that he does not need surgery. They said that pretty early. And that's like all we know. We also know that if I knew he was healthy, which obviously he's not, if I knew he was healthy, he's probably maybe even a little higher for me. But this is probably around where a Max Muncy who plays 85% of the season should be.
Yeah. I mean, we spoke a lot about him last week, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on him, on Max Muncy. But I'd feel more comfortable drafting him and knowing that there's going to be a universal DH because Shohei Ohtani was able to bat before he was able to pitch, and he had Tommy John surgery, right? So I guess we got to think about it that way, no?
Yeah, and he hit pretty well, if I recall. Mm-hmm. So, the other thing is, the reason I'm talking about Max Muncy a lot is probably he's going to be the biggest gap you see in my rankings between ADP.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where ADP is a limited tool. What what's going to happen in the draft for you is probably not his ADP. It's probably more like his min and max. Right? Like his range of outcomes is probably truly anywhere in his min and max, which is like really, really big, right? It's like eight. I think when I pulled this data I just looked at drafts for the last like 2-3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
His ADP was 156 with a min of 88 and a max of 210.
Right. Wow. Yeah. That's
I mean, like, yes, there's a lot of players with that kind of range, but like not players who, when healthy, would be a top 75 player, right? Top 100 mm-hmm. player. It's odd to see such a wide range. That usually tells you injury or role risk. Whatever it is, we're worried how much they're going to play.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on someone in this tier and get your opinion. You know, Whit Merrifield, you have him third, right? And also in this tier. And I'm looking at, his numbers and, 30 stolen bases last season, hits for average. The power seems to be waning. And I kind of look at his, what I think he's going to do this year. And then I look at what I think Tommy Edman might do this year. And to me, they're not that far off. I mean, am I crazy for saying that? I mean, they're both second base outfield eligible. Merrifield might give you maybe 10 extra points, maybe 15 extra points in batting average. But when it comes to power output, they're both basically a 10, 12 homer guy, and they both could steal 30 bases. But, if you wait, you could get Tommy Edman much later.
This is a really interesting question that you pose because it's like the number one thing you're going to see on Twitter for the next bazillion weeks until we're done drafting. Right. And here's the thing. So you looked at Whit Merrifield's numbers from last year. You looked at Tommy Edman's numbers from last year, right? They qualify at the exact same positions. If I was to run the FanGraphs auction calculator using the actual values from 2021, $260 auction calculator, normal 5x5, 12 team, 5 outfield. How far apart do you think those two are in the rankings from last year and in the dollar values? Just because their stats look the same with the eye test, right? You'd think.
But I'm also noticing that, Merrifield's power numbers are kind of like, at one point, I think, at least I did, I thought that this guy could, approach 20 home runs every season. But, you look at, 2017, 19 home runs, 2018, 12, 2019, 16, last season, 162 games, 10 home runs.
Yeah, that part
and 40 stolen bases. Yeah,
that part was, was kind of weird to me as well. I wasn't entirely sure what to make of that. But the thing is, you look at the stats and you really think that they must be pretty close. But the way that it works out when you actually crunch like the dollars earned, mm-hmm. it's not very close, right? Whit Merrifield finished last year as the number 4 second baseman in 5x5. Tommy Edman was 11th, right? Whit Merrifield earned $24. Tommy Edman earned 14, right? Those are huge differences. Mm-hmm. So when we say like, but the reason you're doing that is the same reason I've done it for years, because the stats sort of look the same. And our brain is like, oh, they're kind of close, so it must be the same. But he had like 40 more plate appearances with a batting average that was 15 points better. Like, that matters, right? He had like 20 more RBI. That matters, right? Like, those things do matter. So we're so hyper-focused on like power and stolen base numbers, and they both had like a lot of runs. We're like, oh, so it's about the same. And they both have an okay average, so it's about the same. But like 15 points of average and 20 RBI end up being a lot of dollars, especially when you think about like, they don't like each individual stat isn't worth a cent, right? Like, mm-hmm. they don't get money. It's not like war where they accumulate for each thing they do. It's about when you use these like dollar value generators, these auction calculators, what they're doing is something better than that, which is like comparing them to like the average and how much better than average they are. And like, when you're looking at guys who it looks like they're kind of close together, second base is deep. So it's not that weird to have a huge gap between two guys because of 20 RBI and 15 points of batting average. That's a very realistic thing. So don't like, just because Whit Merrifield and Tommy Edman have similar home run and stolen base numbers, you got to look deeper than that. Those 15 points of batting average, they matter, especially when it's 30 more plate appearances, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of things you got to look at and really like find those auction calculators or dollar value generators that you trust, because your eyes will fool you. Let the math help you. Your eyes are going to be really, they're going to really gravitate towards home run, stolen bases, right? And they're going to kind of disregard things like batting average. And they're going to think of things for runs and RBI that like, oh, they're close, right? Oh, it's just 10 here, 10 there, right? But that matters. All those things matter. Let the computer give you that information. That's why the eye test will fool you. That's why making these ranks is harder than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you did think they're going to have similar seasons, would you rank them right next to each other?
No.
Because I think whether you like you think you're going to have the same season, how many people think that Tommy Edman's going to have a better season?
Well, I did acknowledge. I said that he was going to. No, I said that Merrifield was going to give you the 10 to 15, you know, a 10 to 15 point better batting average than Edman would. But I understand where you're coming from.
No, yeah, and you're totally right. Like, we all do this. I do this. Like, when I do these rankings, the biggest thing that happens is I do the same exact thing. I fall for the same trap. And I've had to learn to let the numbers help me, especially when it comes to things like batting average. Mm-hmm. Like, you can trust your eyes with just like comparing stats, but like especially things like batting average, because batting average is not one stat. It's two, right? It's batting average and plate appearances.
Right.
You really need to factor in both, because the number of plate appearances at that batting average makes a big difference, right? Like, mm-hmm. an extra 30, 40, 50 plate appearances at a better batting average has a much bigger impact. So that's why, like, I'm really harping on this, like, focus on the, like, trust the machines to help you understand the impact of those things. Our natural human brain biases will trick us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people with these strong systems like the Todd Zolas and Phil DeSalt of the world, like, aren't as easily fooled by normal human brain things, because they took their brains out of some of it. This is one of those things to take it out of, trying to intuitively understand how much more impact one batting average had than the other without really like being very, very good at math.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Do we want to discuss any other players here in the third tier, or should we jump over to tier four?
I mean, they're really tightly drafted in a lot of ways. Like, Whit Merrifield and Marcus Semien by ADP will probably go at like the top of this, but then like the next, really like the next two tiers, like they're picked in a really, really close succession, right? Like, I put a tier break in there, but the ADP often suggests that there isn't one, right? Like, they have very similar min picks, very similar max picks. It's really not until you get to like DJ LeMahieu that you start, who I've ranked later, who's at the who's now the start of tier five, that's when you start to see things break out. But the reason three and four are so important is because they're all going to be taken like next to each other. And they're all like, it is really like a big drop off in terms of like upside from these guys. Mm-hmm. Actual production might end up being similar, but upside changes rapidly after the Ketel Martes, Jorge Polancos, and Tommy Edmonds of the world.
All right. The one thing I did notice in comparing your rank of Jazz Chisholm, you have him ranked 13th and in the fourth tier, and NFBC drafts, I believe they have him 7th overall amongst second basemen.
Yeah, they do. And do you know why? Because the NFBC heavily values that hot, nasty speed to go after that overall, right? Like, you got to get speed to have a shot at the overall. But most fantasy baseball players aren't playing in a competition with an overall, right? And so it makes the steals much less valuable. In fact, if you're playing in a head-to-head fantasy league, those steals go from like the most valuable thing to almost a throwaway. Steals are really finicky in head-to-head leagues, and points, they're often just like way, like valued way low compared to getting on base just with your bat.
Mm-hmm.
And then in weekly leagues, like, stolen bases don't come in like a particular fashion or time, right? Like, you don't just, it's not like Roto where you just get the stats no matter when they happen. If you had Nicky Lopez sitting on your bench all year, and then you cut him at the end of, let's say, July, because he had been bad, right? He'd been pretty objectively bad up through the end of July. You would have been fine. And you would have, I mean, he would have stolen you maybe like, I think like eight bases at that time. And then mm-hmm. he stole 10 in a month, right? And like, we all know what Starling Marte did last year. He like doubled his stolen base totals in a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just started flying. So in head-to-head leagues, I push Jazz down even further, right? Like, he does have upside. I think that there's 20-20 upside there for sure in terms of power and speed. I think he needs to fix some things on the plate discipline side,
sure,
like most young players do.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he is super toolsy. Miami's going to play him every single day. The fact of the matter is just like, he's definitely better than like DJ LeMahieu or Jake Cronenworth. I want Jazz Chisholm before those guys because of the upside. But like, the downside, especially in head-to-head, is a player that's really difficult to use.
Right. And according to Fantasy Pros consensus ADPs, they're kind of more in line with yours when it comes to Chisholm. They have him as the 11th second baseman coming off the board. And like you said, I mean, you know, power and speed potential, had a 28.6 K rate last season, so needs to work on his discipline a little bit. High ceiling kind of guy. One thing I did notice that as the season went on, last, he had a upswing in his first pitch strike. So as the season wore on, he started to get in the hole more often in his at-bat. So discipline's an issue for him. And he's young, and I think that should improve.
Yeah, and let's be clear, I'm totally fine with him swinging at the first pitch. He's young, he's athletic, he's got great bat speed. Let him swing. Just like, I totally agree with you. His first pitch swinging wasn't the good kind of first pitch swinging, because mm-hmm. he should be making contact with those. He shouldn't be having so many first pitch strikes. But I like that he's aggressive. I think Miami will keep him aggressive, and I think that there could be a really good player there. I just hope this isn't, and I don't think it is, so please don't get scared when I say it. I think the downside here is a Dylan Moore scenario, where you've got this super fast, like 20-20 guy, but plate discipline problems, and then the batting average craters, and it all falls apart. Because you can't steal bases when you hit 220.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part you got to worry about. You got to hope the bottom doesn't fall off. But if he can continue to make adjustments, and if you watched my presentation on rolling charts, keep an eye on those charts and make sure those dips don't just bottom out. That's the thing you have to worry about.
No. Anyone else in this tier that you think has an opportunity to outproduce their ADP? Like, anybody stick out at you? I mean, Jonathan India, still a young guy. Obviously, I think you and I both like Jorge Polanco a lot in this tier. Anybody else stick out at you?
No, I mean, I think they're just, these are all players that I kind of like, right? So your opinion of, like, one thing I'll tell you to do is if you have a strong opinion of Brandon Lowe, or Lowe, I never remember.
No, you're right. It's Lowe. And I think, yes, maybe let's take
why
it.
Why did I question you, myself?
In my notes, Brandon I actually wrote his name is Loud, so that I would L-O-U-D. Right. But we should also, just before you continue, let's tell, I think we discussed who's in your tier three. Let me just give them who's in your tier four real quick. Ketel Marte, Brandon Lowe, Jonathan India, Jorge Polanco, Tommy Edman, and Jazz Chisholm.
Yeah. And so, like, in terms of, like, standing out, obviously, like, the upsides with Jazz Chisholm, because he could show us power and speed that I don't think anyone else in this tier or in the tiers after him, frankly, have, right? Like, he's a 2020, like, he's a real 2020 upside guy, and he's the last one in this position. I just don't think there's anyone else that's going to do that realistically or even has an outside shot at it besides, like, him and maybe Tommy Edman, but probably not. So that's, like, he's the one that stands out, obviously. I like the, you know, I think Brandon Lowe is the one that I'm targeting the most, mm-hmm, simply because I find that there's a lot of people that were really burned by a cold stretch he had last year where he was really, really bad. But they have to remember that he got real good. Like Brandon Lowe, the final lines are always deceptive. I mean, that's the whole reason I do the rolling charts presentation. But you don't even need necessarily a rolling chart to kind of see what happened and why his season was weird. And you can just go, like, month to month. Like, the power's always there, but, like, the batting average, he was hitting less than 200 all the way up through the end of May.
Hmm. He batted 198 against lefties all season long. Yeah. So that's automatically going to bring his overall batting average, in my opinion, is going to hover around 250.
Yeah, you know. But anyone, yeah. And while I don't recommend just, like, taking first and second half splits, like, his are wild, right? They're wild. He hit 208 in the first, 291 in the second half, right? Like, with 280 versus 335 plate appearances. Like, he totally turned his season around, mm-hmm, in a lot of ways. His plate discipline is always a little spotty, I'd say, but he certainly got a lot better with it. And actually, that's where the whole change happens. It's almost like a light switch. In June, he's striking out a lot. And then in July, he just decides he doesn't want to strike out that much anymore. I haven't dove in enough to find out exactly how that happened, but he totally fixes his plate discipline. He takes that strikeout rate down to, like, a very manageable 25%. And then it continues to drop. Like, in September and October, it was only 22%. He walked less, but he was aggressive with the bat and he was making contact. The guy was posting monthly OPSs of 900 and above. He had two different months with an OPS over 1,000, right? So that's a guy I think that could really explode. And I think that his overall numbers are being dragged down by two really bad months that even then, like, they look so, so bad. But then when you look at the weighted runs created plus, they're actually, like, palatable. Like, mm-hmm, as bad as he looked versus lefties, like, the WRC plus is bad, but it's 83. And I would have thought it would be, like, 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And among all these second basemen here, no matter what tier, you know, if Max Muncy is healthy, he's going to hit, you know, 30 to 35 home runs. And Brandon Lowe is a guy who's going to challenge him for the most home runs among second baseman. He hit 39 last season and 35 he could do, you know, very easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that he's really, like, the other big power threat here. I mean, there's players with power for sure. Like, there's plenty of guys who can threaten 30, right? Right. You know, you get Jorge Polanco hot enough. I mean, he'll push for 30. Those guys I talked about earlier, Eduardo Escobar, Ryan McMahon, Luis Urias, they could push for 30 on a hot season. But, like, the 35
Simeon will go for 30. I mean, you know, he had 45 last season, but I don't know if I love that park for him, but I don't, Texas, you know, yeah,
that's going to be rough.
Yeah. But still, I mean, 30 is a definite possibility for him.
Yeah. I mean, the lineup's got a lot better as well, but again, like, when you're looking for, like, the premium power, like, other people are going to be able to get to 30 home runs out of that second base spot. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be able to get to 35, 40 out of that spot? And you don't have to be the one that does that, but it's kind of nice when you are. And if Max Muncy is going to miss significant time, Brandon Lau leading second base in home runs seems like a really good bet to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll continue breaking down the second base position. We've gone through the first four tiers. If you want to talk a little bit more about any of these guys that we've spoken about, Scott, we can. If not, then we're going to move on to tiers 5 and 6 right after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back. Joe Galina, Scott Chu, Hacks and Jacks, breaking down the fantasy second base position, looking at Scott Chu's ranks and draft strategy, too, when it comes to second base position. These are going live, right? I mean, we're, like I said, we're recording this podcast on Monday night, and by the time this podcast is dropped, you're going to know what PL7 looks like, right?
Yeah, you will. And it's really exciting. I don't know if these specific second base rankings will be up yet.
Mm-hmm.
On launch day, there's a set of rankings that were released. And then throughout the rest of this week, we're going to release the rest. It's simply because there's a whole bunch of them. And, you know, we're human beings. It was, you know, I've certainly got other things going on, this stupid knee among them. But we are really excited about PL7. And there's even more stuff that's not going to be there at launch. And like, I'm not going to spoil too much, but like, my favorite thing in the world is going to be something we can do on our website for our players. So, you know, whatever that means, it's going to be something we can do on our website using StatCast data.
Yes. Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. Can't wait to see it in action. Okay. So why don't we move over to tier five, unless there's a few other players that you want to speak about that were in the previous tiers. But tier five, you start off with DJ LeMahieu, Jake Cronenworth, Ty France, Brendan Rodgers, Chris Taylor, Ryan McMahon, Eduardo Escobar, Luis Urias, Jonathan Scope. So, I mean, this is a real interesting tier. Yeah, there's a few guys in here that I really wouldn't mind if I had to, depending on my draft strategy, making my starting second baseman. I mean, I like Jake Cronenworth and Ty France. They're both first base and second base eligible, and Cronenworth adds shortstop to it. But I like them better, Cronenworth and Ty France, as second baseman than first baseman when it comes to fantasy, based on expected production.
Yeah, you know, the weird thing about second base is second base, like, we're listing all these guys, but it's actually going to feel more shallow than this because these guys all play other positions as well. And they'll be drafted in many cases for one of those other positions and not second base. So, for example, the people drafting Marcus Semien or Javier Baez could use them at shortstop or second base, which means the second base pool might have lost two of its best players and all of a sudden looks a whole lot more shallow, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if if Trey Turner, Marcus Semien and Javier Baez all get moved to, like, all are that team's shortstop, which is likely. Shortstop is also, like, super, like, it is super loaded, but you might decide like you're set and you wait, like those people want to wait on second base, but the second base pool just becomes more shallow. It evaporates because of how many guys could just be drafted for their other position. Right. I mean, even in this particular tier five, is entirely made up of multi-eligible players.
Mm-hmm.
LeMahieu, Cronenworth, France, Rogers, Taylor, McMahon, Escobar, Urias, Scope. They are all eligible at multiple positions. Four of them are eligible at three positions, right? With LeMahieu, Cronenworth, Taylor, and Urias. So, this whole range, like, I'm comfortable with a lot of these guys. And here's the thing. One of these guys might end up being your, I forgot about a second baseman, so I guess this is my guy.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This is where, in a 12-team league, that's maybe passable. It'd be harder in the Yahoo format where there's not a middle infield. So you're really going to wish you had someone better than this in that second base spot. But if you don't, you can survive. You can beg, borrow, and steal your way to streaming. And I know it sounds crazy, but in 12-team leagues, you can app, especially the Yahoo format, but to some extent, like ESPN or CBS, you can stream the back end of this position if you have to. You just have to know what you're going to get. And I think the back of this position tells you exactly what to expect from this tier, which is the McMahon, Escobar, Urias scope. Power, 250 batting average.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that you get is great. Maybe a couple steals, right? Like, and then that's where, like, after that, it's just kind of weirder and just not, like, the next tier is not viable in 12-team leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But and maybe that's what I'm really trying to say. This is the end of the viability in a 12-team league. Maybe the top of the next tier, Colton Wong, if he's, like, you know, batting towards the top of the lineup and stealing, he could, like, move up mm-hmm. into five. But, like, I'm also not entirely sure how they're going to work playing time out in Milwaukee's middle infield mm-hmm. yet. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, so he could get bumped up. But, I mean, the rest of these guys, they are streamers at best. Kike Hernandez, Josh Rojas. I mean, I'll let you go through the rest, but they're going to be situational or streamers at best.
I happen to like Kike Hernandez, which is weird for a Yankee fan liking a Red Sox player. But in staying with Tier 5 for just a second, anyone in this tier that you're kind of concerned about that might not get the regular playing time, or you're confident that everybody's going to get, you know, at least 500 plate appearances here? You know, Eduardo Escobar, you're confident that he's going to get, you know, plenty of playing time with the Mets? You know, we mentioned Cano. I mean, what are the Mets going to do with Cano? Don't you know?
I had almost forgotten about him. And sometimes I think the Mets might have forgotten about him, like until his like paycheck comes out of the account. Yeah. They're like, oh yeah, we're still paying that guy.
Yeah, it's thank like God for the DH, because if he does come back, the guy could hit.
Yeah, well, Eduardo Escobar is like Hello Fresh to me, mm-hmm. where it's like Robinson Cano. I keep forgetting he exists until like it comes up on my bank statement. I'm like, I'm gonna get the vegetable bean soup again, because I forgot to cancel it, and they forgot to cancel it, and now they're gonna be stuck with the vegetable bean soup, which is a fine soup, but like not what you paid $87 to have delivered to your door every month or whatever. That's what Robinson Cano is for them. I don't rank him.
And you shouldn't. I agree that he shouldn't be a top 30 guy.
Ranked a lot of guys, and I mm-hmm. I think I had him down at like 45.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number, and I don't even think that's a real rank. That's just like where the projection system I use spit him out.
Mm-hmm.
I would take other guys that are under him above him because I think they might be interesting, and I don't think Robinson Cano will be. But either way, like this tier, I'm not too worried about playing time yet. Like there's no, you know, if Jake Cronenworth was going to lose playing time, it was going to be last year, mm-hmm. unless Ha-Seong Kim has made some huge adjustment. You know, Jake Cronenworth should be very, very safe. I wondered if you were baiting me about Brendan Rodgers because of my utter lack of faith in Colorado. but you know, I like Brendan Rodgers. I'm not,
I do as well.
I'm not putting in a lot to get him. I'm not having to like reach for Brendan Rodgers. He's just a guy that you often take as like a back end sort of guy. And I think there's actually room to go around. That's the weirdest thing, is there's actually room for Garrett Hampson, Brendan Rodgers, and Ryan McMahon all at the same time. All they had to do was gut their team and turn into a team that's probably going to lose for a decade. But that's all they had to do. All they had to do was completely gut their team and now be this weird middle-aged team with like very little upside. But like they made room for their young players who are now 25, 20, and 27 and 27. Mm-hmm. They finally made room.
Hey, better late than never, right? And Fantasy Pros does agree with you. Ranked Brendan Rodgers 17th. According to Fantasy Pros consensus rankings, he's 20th second baseman taken off the board, 165 ADP. But like you, I like him as well. And it will be interesting, right? Because we have, Ryan McMahon and Brendan Rodgers, like I said, according to your ranking, 17th for Rodgers and Ryan McMahon, 19th. And then you got, like you said, Garrett Hampson just outside the top 30. And it's going to be weird, but I think that all three of them could put up, not tremendous numbers, but could be somewhat fantasy viable.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of draft and holds are gonna be really excited to grab a Garrett Hampson, especially because of the speed upside. Mm-hmm. We've played this game before with him. And just to put into context, like, there's a reason that I have an utter lack of faith in Colorado's ability to develop players and give them playing time. And that's because Brendan Rodgers has been their number one prospect pretty much since they drafted him in 2015.
Yeah.
He's been in their system for 7 years. He's just now getting a shot.
Yeah. Following his minor league career for years now. You're right.
They drafted Garrett Hampson in the third round in 2016. Ryan McMahon, that was a second round pick in 2013. I was like still in law school when they drafted Ryan McMahon. It was a lifetime ago.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry, they finally made time. They got time. Poor Ryan McMahon's been sitting here with an option. He's got to be the only guy with the number of plate appearances who was drafted, like the only guy from the 2013 draft class that's still in the league and like has an option. And he plays for the freaking Rockies. So he's like, oh my God, they might use it. Like they might send me down. for God knows why. There's my required rant against the Rockies.
Yeah, I knew it was coming. I wasn't intentionally baiting you, but I'm glad I mentioned Rodgers just to get that out of you.
Poor Ryan McMahon. He's going to get optioned because it's stupid. Or like Connor Joe has got two options. I like Connor Joe. He's got some upside. Blah blah blah. We'll talk about it in the outfield. But like, this team is so frustrating. And now they can all play. Now that they're post-type sleepers, they're all playing now.
Yeah. So let's go to tier six real quick. Colton Wong, like you mentioned, Enrique Hernandez, Josh Rojas, Nick Madrigal, who I forgot got traded to the Cubs, Cesar Hernandez, Gavin Lux, Adam Frazier, and you close it out with Gene Segura. I kind of like Enrique or Kike Hernandez, second base outfield eligible, 28th second baseman coming off the board according to Fantasy Pros. What I liked about him, Scott, was he got to Fenway and he kind of changed his approach a little bit to suit his surroundings, right? I mean, posted career high in fly balls, 32.6 pull rate, right, which is important for a right-handed hitter with the green monster there. Barreled up on the ball at the highest rate of his career. And then you can't forget what he did in the playoffs.
Playoffs?
Even though it doesn't help us in season-long fantasy, but batted 408 and hit five home runs in the playoffs. So I just think that, Fenway Park seems to be a pretty good fit for him.
Yeah, and what's not to like about him, right? The thing with him, and I know I feel so negative, he's in a good position. Like, they let him lead off. He's this like weird, unconventional leadoff man, and everybody loves it. As far as his managers go, there's some value there, but like the full season upside just isn't there. He's he's just, he's replacement. He's a replacement level guy for fantasy purposes. He's much better than that in real life, but for fantasy purposes, he ends up being this replacement level guy who you stream when he's going to face like a bunch of lefties or just has like some soft matchups in general where he's going to be leading off. That's about it. So, you know, he's a guy that I want to like more because I like him, but like the fantasy numbers just like don't end up being there, and they don't end up supporting, like, anytime you want to push him up, you just can't. Like, even last season, you want to be like, that was a pretty decent season, right? Like 84 runs scored. He did hit 20 home runs, but like, again, that's just a lesser version of some of the guys we already talked about. Like, yeah, his plate discipline is better, but that doesn't show up in the 5x5 lines, right? Right. It shows up in his overall consistency. But also, the projections they have for Kike Hernandez don't make any sense to me because they have way too many RBI. They think he's going to beat his RBI by like 20, and I don't get it because he's going to lead off a lot for no particular reason.
Right. I guess I'm kind of with you. He's probably more of a streaming option. But like I said, I was just impressed that he was able to adjust his approach to his surroundings. But not often that, you know, you're going to hear me praising a Red Sox player as a Yankee fan. But anybody else in this tier that you think that has an opportunity to really kind of, again, outplay their ADP, outplay their tier? How about Gavin Lux? Go ahead.
They all have an opportunity.
Everybody has an opportunity. This is America, for crying out loud.
Except for Gene Segura. Gene Segura is going to do exactly what Gene Segura always does. I will rank him 30th at my second base rankings until he retires. Because every projection system is going to put him a lot higher than that because he's an accumulator. He's this guy that's going to get like 10 home runs, 10 stolen bases, and he's going to get a bunch of points added because of the batting average, right? And the ton of plate appearances that he gets because he plays every single day, right? But he's not actually that good at any of those things. And in a 12-team league, you can stream better than Gene Segura, even if you don't draft a second baseman. I guarantee you can stream Gene Segura by either constantly streaming or cutting guys until someone else clicks in a 12-teamer, right? In a 15-teamer, his value changes a lot because you need those plate appearances. But in a 12-teamer, you don't need the plate appearances because there will be guys who play every day on the wire. The plate appearances don't matter like they do in a 15-team league. So in those shallower leagues, like, Gene Segura goes from like a very useful middle infielder to a non-consideration because he doesn't have enough upside to always warrant the bench spot.
But what do you think his end numbers are going to be? Because I have him, I have him as like a 280, 15 homers, 10 stolen base guy. Am I being too optimistic here?
I mean, that's kind of what he did last season, I guess. He hit pretty well. I mean, he finished as like a fringy top 25 second baseman. He'll probably finish better than 30th, but I put him at 30th because I'm a petty man and I want to make a point.
Yeah, you want to teach him a lesson. Yeah. This is where you're going to go. Yeah.
Not even just him, right? But it's like, he's actually very, he's this injury replacement that's also hard to use situationally. Because when you add him, you're not adding, like, a lot of times when you add a player, you're like, well, I need this stat, right? I'm behind on steals. I want to get someone. That's when in this tier, I kind of like a guy like Nick Madrigal, who at one time we were taking near the top 50 picks or top 150 picks, right? At one time, which was the beginning of last year, one year ago today, we cared a lot more about Nick Madrigal than we do now. Obviously, a lot of things have changed. And we also know that he has like absolutely no power. And he only stole one base in 54 games. Like, that's the part that's scary, that he's played a lot. He's played 83 major league games and only has three steals. That's not going to cut it. But his speed suggests he should be faster than that. He should continue to make good contact. Those numbers have been real good, right? The plate discipline is awesome.
Yes.
He's this very, right now, the problem is he looks very much like this David Fletcher, Luis Arraez sort of guy, but not multi-positional eligible, which is bad. And his role is in flux, but you know, he puts a lot of balls in play. there's this universe where if he can get just be at the top of a lineup, he could do some damage up there. Still, like, he would be a great fit in like Kansas City because they wouldn't have anything to do with him but make him run, and he would just run until his legs, you know, until there were no more bases to steal. He would steal all the bases, and no park would have any bases left. It's all they do. But they can't do that. So the Cubs hopefully steal more than the White Sox do. But I haven't done the research on that. And he's going to be this guy that's very situational. Mm-hmm. It's, I need batting average and speed. But at least he's then someone that you could add. Like, oh, he's got great batting average, and he's going to be facing the, you know, a team with a terrible battery
week. That's what I see him more as, like a streamer, waiver wire ad, where all of a sudden you're going to be, you know, sorting in the stolen base position. And, you know, let's say in May, he might have 7 stolen bases. Say, wow, okay. And like you mentioned, he'll have the good batting average. And, you know, it depends where he would hit in the lineup too. Might have some run production as well. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm going to go out and draft him, but he's somebody that's going to be on my watch list.
No, he's like a draft champions kind of guy. You don't have to draft him. And that's true of all these back end guys. And like, what's fun is there are a lot of exciting players in the back, like in the backs of these positions. Mm-hmm. They just kind of don't matter that much in 12 team fantasy leagues. Right. And so I have to keep saying that. So like, I don't make you think that like, oh, I'm really excited about this player, so you should draft him in your 12 team Yahoo league. Like, I can be as excited about an opportunity for Luis Arraez as I want, which could be very exciting, right? I love Luis Arraez, but like, I just can't tell you to draft him in a 12-team league because he's not going to do enough.
Right.
There's just not a net. There's not enough potential universes where he finishes inside the top 15 of the position.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else that didn't make the cut that you think, or that you were struggling with, that you think that might surprise us?
No, but I'm going to talk about these guys anyway. So I am unreasonably a fan of Isak Paredes. He's with the Tigers. He has no defensive position. He's not very strong defensively, but he did rake in AAA last year. He had some time in the major leagues. He did all right. There's not really a place for him on this team, especially if you think Torkelson's going to break camp, which I think there's a really good shot. He's got a really good shot to do so, and then there's nowhere to play him. But he's got a really good hit tool, and he's this guy that could be Ty France-ish in a way in terms of like stat output, but he'd have to get the opportunity, and I think he's far from it. So like, there's a player in there who could very well be, if he had a full-time job, if for whatever reason the world ends and he's got a full-time job, I would definitely be putting him in tier 6 at least. Well, tier 6 only. He can only go in tier 6, but he'd be in tier 6, but I can't. Right?
Because is he going to break camp with the team?
Like, even if he does, he won't play. Right? He's a guy, like, that's a very deep guy I'm looking at. Like, how about the rise and fall of Nick Solak? Like, that's crazy. And Willie Castro.
Yeah.
There's going to be names that you're like, weren't we talking about this guy a lot last year?
I expected a lot more out of Solak. And then now the Rangers have middle infield is set, right? But Solak's going to be playing the outfield a little bit.
I guess so. But like, Tommy La Stella has shown that he can be an interesting player, right? David Bodie gets hot once a year. Isak Paredes. Jed Lowry is probably going to have a hot, like, don't fall for it again. Like, let him just have his hot April and then like, just let it go. That's all that's going to happen. Even Hanser Alberto is a free agent. He actually had a fantasy relevant season. So like, there's interesting stuff down here for you.
Rougned Odor is going to hit some home runs for the Orioles, but he's going to bat 200. That's the issue.
This guy is amazing. He keeps getting work. Like, there's something he has no business making it onto this many teams. Like, for being as bad, like, for his beat, like, how does a less than one WAR player?
I have to say, like, that watching him every day for a while with the Yankees last season, his enthusiasm is infectious. Like is it, he's like the first guy that runs out of the dugout to, you know, slap a hand or congratulate someone. But again, you're right. I mean, you know, he's got some power, but can't hit, you know, can't hit for average. So yeah, I don't know. He's gotten many opportunities now, and sometimes you wonder why. But look where he's playing.
it's this thing where, like, what happens is they pick up Rougned Odor and they go, he could hit 30 home runs. And it's like, that's a ton of guys in baseball now. It yeah. was like Rougned Odor's been around a long time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, he broke.
He could fight. We know he could fight. He could throw
a
punch.
Yeah, we know he could fight. Like, that was a long, that was with Jose Bautista. That's how old, like, that's how long he's been in the league. Right. That fight was with Jose Bautista. Right. He's not in the league. He hasn't right. been in the league. Right. So that's the thing. Like, he's only, this is his age 28 season, which is mm-hmm. just wild to me because he's been around forever. But like, he's this guy where even if they gave him full playing time, he'd hit his 30 home runs and you wouldn't want it on your fantasy team outside of, like, how do you hit 15 home runs in 100 games and still slug 379? That's everything you need to know about what Rougned Odor is bringing to the table for fantasy right now.
Right,
he had 15 home runs in 102 games and a 379 slug. That's wild.
Mm.
He actually has done this before too. In 2017, he hit 30 home runs and slugged 397.
Amazing.
That's he can like break the game. He had 30 home runs. Do you know what his? We're going to end with this because I'm just ranting about Rougned Odor. 2017 is just amazing. His age 23 season, he hits 30 home runs. He steals 15 bases.
Beautiful, right?
He hits, yeah. He had a 56 WRC plus. I didn't even know that was possible. I think that's the same year that Nomar Mazara got like 100 RBI for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's around that time when the Rangers, like, they were really good offensively, but part of it was like park factors and, you know, this so-called jet stream and all that. But like, this guy managed to hit 30 home runs and not slug 400.
Yeah.
Like, that means something is deeply wrong with the profile.
Yes. Yes.
That shouldn't work. Like, that's broken in the bad way. Like, what Ohtani does breaks the system in a good way. People shouldn't be able to have the fastest pitch, the hardest hit ball, and the furthest hit ball.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get all of those, right? And like the fastest sprint speed in the game. Like, how does one guy get all of those? That's broken. Rougned Odor is like, how do you do so many good things and end up so bad? How does that happen?
It's something we're gonna have to get our crack staff, our data scientists, right?
The mysteries of life that yes. you can be that good and also be terrible. Objectively, a 56 WRC plus is objectively awful.
Mm-hmm.
He did it with 30 home runs. Ah!
Just so that we don't leave with this bad taste in our mouth of Rougned Odor, I'll just mention, keep an eye out for Nolan Gorman for the Cardinals. I know I spoke about Tommy Edman earlier, but basically this guy, Nolan Gorman, is waiting in the wings, power hitting, second base eligible player for the Cardinals, can play some third base as well. Hit 25 home runs between AAA and AA. So other than that, unless there's any more strategy that you want to impart, Scott, you did a great job today.
I'm just glad you're here giving people actual information and not just complaining about Rougned Odor having good stats that are terrible.
Rougned Odor.
Like, that's going to be the thing. You're like, oh, man. I want to, like, clickbait the podcast and just be like, they talked about Rougned Odor for 5 minutes. So why does Scott have so many facts about Rougned Odor? Because he makes no sense. Because that shouldn't work.
Mm.
Because it's evil magic. That's why it's evil
but
magic.
But he's going to be a starting major leaguer this year.
He kind of looks like he would know evil magic, though. Mm. Like when he had the little beard, when he was getting punched by Jose Bautista.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when he had to shave off his beard as a Yankee, his I don't know how old his kid was, obviously very young, but his kid didn't recognize him anymore. So,
whatever happened to his shorts? He was wearing shorts for a while. Well, we appreciate you guys listening to the RugNet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Let's stop now before. yes. All right. So great stuff as always there, Scott. What are we doing next? Short or third base? What do you want to do next week?
Let's do shortstop. I'm not emotionally ready to talk about third base yet.
Very, very deep shortstop position next week, Wednesday, February 16th. And don't forget to follow me at Jogly. Don't forget to follow that guy. His name is Scott Chu at If The Chu Fits. Follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL. If there's anything specific that you'd like us to cover, or if you'd like us to stop talking about Runyan Odor, let us know there. So subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. Leave us a nice review or just tell us to stop talking about Runyan Odor. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities, and we'll see you next time.